Good evening and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay, and this evening I'm delighted to welcome to the show Jill Friel, and we're going to be talking this evening about raising attainment in children's writing. Good evening, Jill. Welcome to Radio Edutalk.
Oh, good evening, David, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you along, and it would be great if you could just give listeners a kind of brief background to your career, Jill, and particularly your involvement around this kind of, agenda or desire to improve children's writing.
Yes, I'm absolutely passionate about this subject. And my background, I've taught for many, many years, and I was the head teacher of two schools, a rural primary school and a large city primary school in Stirling. And I've worked as a seconded advisor on the teaching of language within a local authority. I've been an associate inspector. I was an associate inspector on the first language inspection there was of colleges, actually. And I've written extensively, quite a lot with Sue Ellis. Sue Ellis and I worked together a lot. And I've written a lot also by myself, always on the subject of writing or reading. For the last 6 years, I've been working part-time at Strathclyde University, mainly with PGDE students, and I also do in-service in schools for about children's writing. So that's my background.
Okay, that's great. And I'll just say to listeners at this point, if you've got a question or comment for our guest this evening, Jill Friel, you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something up on Twitter and include the hashtag edutalk. And if you get in touch during the live show, you'll be able to put your comment or question to Jill almost immediately. Jill, can you tell us a bit more about where your kind of passion for writing comes from?
I think I discovered very early on in my career that it was the most difficult area to teach, particularly story writing. Children found that terribly difficult. And so I began to read, research, and try out different methodologies. And I was fascinated, and I was really keen to see children improve in that area. You know, writing poetry, stories, and nonfiction writing as well. And when I was seconded for a couple of years to Strathclyde University, a lot of years ago, where Sue Ellis and I first met up, and we realized that this was the area that students found most difficult to teach as well. And when you look at the complexity of writing, you know, no wonder that our children find difficulty in doing it, and no wonder that our students and teachers find it difficult. So I suppose I looked upon it as a serious challenge, and I've worked very hard on it, you know, all my career. Sorry, David. You said to me that I could perhaps suggest that any listeners out there think about some ideas.
We often invite our listeners to kind of pose a couple of scenarios or kind of reflective questions. It would be great if you'd like to start off with that, Jill.
One could be, why is it that when teachers are working so hard to teach writing, children are demotivated quite often and groan when the subject of writing is mentioned? Now, that's not always the case, of course. There are schools in which children are desperate to write and write very successfully. But a lot of teachers say to me that they're finding that the children are not as keen to write as they were maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So I think that's something to maybe think about. And the second question I'd like people to have a think about is, how do they approach writing as adults? You know, when you've got an important letter to write or an assignment to do for an extra qualification, how do you approach this? How do you go about doing it. And maybe a third thing to think about is the fact that nursery children are so keen to write. They're absolutely fascinated by it, and they're always doing squiggly lines and circles, and you know, they write lists and menus, and yet when they come to school, they quite often become demotivated. So, you know, what's going wrong in that transition from nursery to school?
Yeah, and I wonder where we're at then, Jill. You know, this is it all about, or one of the starting points when we're discussing improving children's writing around, I suppose, this question of balance, the balance or the tension maybe between an emphasis on teaching grammar and spelling maybe versus allowing children to explore ideas and be creative.
You know, you've really hit on a really important principle, actually, because I do believe that getting the balance right between teaching grammar and facilitating and teaching children how to get ideas when they write, it's really crucial that we get this balance right. And also that the emphasis lies in the right place. I mean, in going around schools, I see a lot of very good writing, and I see a lot of very motivated teachers and inspirational teachers. And when I look at those schools and when I consider the work I've done myself in raising attainment, I think the really important thing is that the children who are successful in writing and want to write, they understand that writing is about communication. And it's not about proving that they're good at writing different openers to sentences, or that they're good at thinking of different connectives. Or indeed even that they're good at always getting their spelling correct. They actually understand that the main reason for writing is to think of ideas and get them written down in order to communicate a real idea for a purpose to an audience. Those are the children who are being successful in their writing, and those are the teachers who understand that and are teaching the children that are the ones who are having the greatest success, actually.
Mm-hmm. Is there a danger that kind of message can be kind of misconstrued as sort of suggesting that grammar and spelling are unimportant or less important?
Well, sometimes people mention my name in connection with this, and I find that quite offensive, actually, because, you know, in order to communicate, our spelling and our grammar have got to be correct. And there is definitely a place for teaching grammar and spelling to children, a really important place. But the place that the children need to understand that these are tools, these are writing tools, and they're to be used in order to communicate ideas. And they're not an end in themselves. So if children really understand that perhaps they're writing a story that they're going to read to the infants, for example, if they understand that the important thing in that is that the story has to be exciting, it's got to have good characters, it's got to be set in an interesting place, there's got to be a problem there that's solved at the end of the story. If they understand that, and they understand that the story's got to be exciting, they also understand that the infants have got to be able to at least be party to the reading of the story, and that the grammar and the punctuation and the spelling have got to be correct. Otherwise, the communication of the ideas of the story, you know, will not happen. But it's that idea that the ideas come first and not last. David, can I just give an example of what I mean here?
Yeah, of course, that'd be great.
I observe an awful lot of teaching in schools, in my, you know, the different roles that I've got. And I often see teachers and students giving really really motivating lessons and really turning children on to ideas. And they're feeling really excited, actually, about getting down to doing some writing. And then the teacher will actually stop them doing that and remind them about how they've got to write in correct sentences. And sentences begin with capital letters and end with full stops. And that they have to include as many connectives as they can, different connectives, a variety of connectives, in order to join sentences together. And, you know, by the time they have finished going through reminders about grammar and spelling and punctuation, the children actually have lost the will to live, never mind write. And if the listeners can do one thing tomorrow in school to raise attainment in writing, they would actually give the children the opportunity to write their ideas and then look at the work they've done and edit the work that they're writing, possibly even with a friend, you know, assisting them with this sort of peer assessment. And correct punctuation at that point, and correct spelling at that point, and then possibly redraft the piece of writing into a beautiful publication. If everybody could approach writing from that standpoint, children's writing would immediately be improved.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jill. Coach a football team, and I've been through a lot of kind of coach education sessions, and they all talk about the need to just get the young people active. And of course, we know that by active it can be in a variety of different ways, you know, physically, intellectually, etc. But the importance to just get them starting and get them right into the activity. And it also reminds me of a couple of teacher education courses I was on a few years ago, where we as professionals practiced snack writing, and just, you know, just getting down and getting words committed to paper, and then kind of looking back or reviewing at a certain point down the line. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about, you know, allowing the young people to express themselves as soon to the start of the activity as possible?
Exactly. And, you know, that question I ask people to consider as well about how they go about approaching writing. It's a really weird thing that professional writers, for example, will demand time to think about their writing and will certainly not be writing a first draft for publication. And yet we expect our very youngest children, who are just apprentices, you know, they're just learning how to write, we expect them to do a first copy that is perfect, grammatically and spelling-wise and punctuation-wise. And yet, you know, the very adult teacher who is expecting this of the children will never approach their writing in that way. You know, all the listeners, all the people who are listening at the moment are professional people, and they're therefore good writers. And yet, if they were writing a really important letter or an assignment, or doing their forward planning, or writing to a parent, they would do several drafts of that before they were satisfied with it. And these conditions that professional writers demand and professional people demand, we have to allow our children these conditions. You know, we've got to let them have a go at writing, and then return to that. We've got to teach them how to edit their own writing. And during that process, there's a huge place for teachers to stop the class and say, just a minute, you know, I think some of you have forgotten about some grammar point, and do a short mini lesson about something that has been observed as going wrong across the class. There's a very, very important place for teaching grammar in mini lessons, and indeed in, you know, the lesson that happens every Monday morning, perhaps on grammar. We have to keep teaching grammar all the time, but we have to understand that grammar does not come first. it's ideas and communication that come first.
And Jill, you're talking about the time and space to think, to get out, very initial ideas, written down or considered, and then grouped together well in advance of a first draft being written. So, in terms of the kind of day to day teaching and learning in a classroom, I wonder if some teachers might say that if we assume that the curriculum as it stands tends to be crowded, where are we going to find this time, this thinking space, time for editing and redrafting, and might the children get a bit fed up with this process if it's a little bit too long?
Yeah. This is exactly what teachers do say. I mean, when I give in service, teachers will say, but, how can we do this when we're actually only teaching writing once a week for 2 hours? But all I can say about that is even Curriculum for Excellence recognises that writing is absolutely central to what we should be teaching in schools, to the extent where they have insisted that secondary school teachers, science teachers, maths teachers have to teach the genre of writing that actually fits with their subject area, and that teachers who teach science have to be teaching writing and reading as well within their own particular discipline. Now, in primary schools, we have to be doing this too. So, people have said to me, do you have a silver bullet for how you can actually raise attainment and get children interested in writing? And yeah, I do actually. I do have a silver bullet. And the answer is that all day long, writing should be taught and reading should be taught alongside the other subject areas that we're teaching, the other curricular areas. So, for example, when you are teaching science in a primary school, children need to be taught how to write an experiment in a particular way, in a particular genre. So when you're teaching science, you're teaching science and you're also teaching writing and you're also teaching reading. And the same for RME and all the other subject areas. So in actual fact, in the schools where I have been fortunate enough to be a head teacher and be able to make decisions about the time that's spent on writing, we've been teaching writing all day long and using the contexts of the other subjects that we teach in order to make the writing interesting and give subject, and ideas to the writing that's going on. And the result of that, because the emphasis is constantly on literacy, the attainment in literacy rises. And I can't say how quickly this can happen. It's not something that's slow to happen, actually. If the attitude of the teacher has changed towards what is happening in terms of writing, there can be an immediate impact and an immediate improvement in children's writing.
I'll just remind listeners at this point, you're listening to Jill Friel, and we're talking about raising attainment in children's writing. I should have mentioned at the top of the show, if you're listening to the live broadcast, you can go to edutalk.cc, and just next to the show listing for Jill's appearance on Edutalk, there is a link to a Dropbox folder. If you click on that link, it will show some examples, some images that Jill's kindly shared with us of pupils' writing. Jill, I don't know if you want to speak a little just about some of the images that you've shared with us and that listeners can access through the EduTalk website.
I'm so sorry, David. I just didn't catch the last thing that you said.
Yeah, so you shared, I think it was about seven photographs of children's writing, and we've put them up onto the EduTalk website. Do you want to talk about any of these particular examples, these images that you sent to us before the show started?
Yes, I certainly would. That would be a great thing to do. Thank you. Well, I've put up some examples of non-fiction writing, just pages out of children's books. And, you know, with non-fiction writing, it's really important that children be given the opportunity to write in the style that they actually like to read. So if you ask children what sort of non-fiction books they like to read, they'll come up with all sorts of ideas about all books that have flaps that lift and short pieces of writing sometimes, and sometimes longer and more extended pieces about the subject area. And they always like pages in books that are illustrated. And it's a great opportunity to teach children about how to use space on a page, to get them to look at some of the beautiful non-fiction books that are published now, and then get them to replicate this in their own writing when they are writing down information about subjects that really interest them, or indeed when they're doing the class projects. You know, if when children are doing the class projects, rather than doing it on bits of paper that go in folders, if they're given a really nice big A4 jotter to do it in, they can actually, when they're doing their writing about their project, they can do it as if they are professional writers actually publishing a book. And the pages that I've put up on your site are examples of individual pages that have come from children's, that I've taken from children's books, to illustrate the way in which children can are fired up by this idea of producing their own nonfiction writing that is illustrated and beautifully presented, and where the choice of information that they're making in order to convey to other people is in their hands. You know, they're making some of the decisions about that, as well as some of the decisions being made by teachers. Some of the books that I've put up, some of the photographs are of extended writing projects, where children are given the opportunity to write a really, really long story in chapters and illustrate the story. And you can just, I put those up to let you see how beautiful these final publications can be. And I say to teachers who are concerned about grammar and punctuation and spelling, you know, if children are actually writing a story that's going to be published in this way, in this beautiful way, they actually understand why it's important for their spelling to be correct and the punctuation to be correct, because it's a book that's going to be read by somebody they've dedicated it to, and probably the school will have a book launch that brings in people who are going to read their books. You know, when there is a purpose and an audience for the writing that you do, it immediately impacts on the quality of the writing and the quality of the layout of the writing as well, and the illustration.
And Jill, if that's the case, then is there an argument for saying that all written work in school should have some kind of an audience?
I just didn't catch that.
Sorry, Jill. I'm just saying if it is the case that where there is an audience for children's writing, it does lead to these improvements, is that therefore an argument that children's writing in school should always have an audience?
Well, I mean, to a great extent, that's what I see in schools where children are producing really good work. That teachers are finding audiences for their children's writing, so that children actually understand what writing is all about. But, I mean, I would also say one of the greatest gifts that you can give to children is a rough drafting jotter. You know, this is something that Roald Dahl had, and all the, you know, the great writers always have notebooks in which they keep records of interesting things they see or characters that they are developing, and they keep rough notes that they can then use when they come to write a story or to write a piece of nonfiction writing. You know, in a school that I was working in recently, I was in a P6 class, and I introduced the idea of the rough writing jotters, and I said, when you're doing your rough copy, your first copy, it doesn't matter about your handwriting or your spelling or your punctuation. It's the story that matters. And then you will come back and you will correct all of that and rewrite it in your very, very best handwriting for the actual publication. Those children told me at the end of the project that that was the most precious thing they had been given, was the right to have a jotter in which they could score things out and put arrows around and, you know, asterisks and change things and rub things out. Because it had sort of freed them up to be able to write about ideas rather than being cramped and concerned all the time about, you know, full stops and capital letters, and is that how you spell this? And, you know, sometimes I'm in classes observing lessons where children are actually looking into space and worrying, and the teacher will say to them, you know, can I help you with something? And they say, yes, I've only got two adjectives, and I think that we need to have three adjectives. You know, they're actually counting the words that they're using,
yeah,
instead of being free to express themselves and then possibly change adjectives at a later stage when they actually edit that work.
So, Jill, we're coming to the end of this evening's show. You know, you've talked about the importance of there being a purpose to young people's writing, an audience in whichever form, and the need to have balance between the rules and allowing young people to be free to some extent. Is there anything, and you've given us so many wonderful examples that I think many of us could apply to our classrooms, you know, tomorrow. Is there anything else that we could change now that would have a great impact?
I do think that the main thing is to make sure that, you know, the editing of children's work and the emphasis on grammar comes after they've actually written the ideas. I think that if that's one thing that people can do in their attitude towards children's writing and to change children's attitudes towards writing, it will make a big difference. And because at the moment, children are actually being stopped. They're being prevented from writing, actually, by some of the practice that's going on. And believe me, I see an awful lot of extremely good practice. So this is not everybody, but when teachers come to me and they're worried about children's motivation, it is generally that the emphasis is far too great on the grammar aspect at the wrong time, you know, because grammar is essential and absolutely crucial and important, but it needs to come at the same time as it comes with adults when they write. You know, any adult who's listening to this at the moment, if I said sit down right now and write a story and make sure that the sentences are correct and that you're using a variety of connectives and plenty of rich vocabulary and make sure every single word you write is spelt correctly, people would be horrified by that. That's not how we approach writing as adults. Why are we doing this to children?
It's fantastic advice, Jill. And finally, you know, you're a well-known and prolific author, and I know that you're involved in teacher education, CPD, etc. So can you maybe recommend a couple of your texts that we might want to explore after tonight's show? And how can people get in touch with you if they would like further information or possibly to speak to you about future CPD needs?
Well, if anybody is interested in making a comment to me about what I've said this evening, I have an email address. Could I give that to people?
Yes, of course.
It's Freels. That's FRIELS at talktalk.net. Freels at talktalk.net. And I'd be very happy to respond to any questions or indeed any arguments that people want to put forward about what I've said this evening.
Jill, thank you so much for taking time out to join us on EduTalk this evening. It's been absolutely fascinating. I'm very privileged to have you on the show, and we welcome you back anytime, and best wishes for the future.
Thank you very much, David. It's been really interesting. Congratulations on your work as well.
Thank you very much.